Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. In this week's episode, the guys go over Realtor.com's 2025 housing market predictions based on housing inventory, housing cost, and mortgage interest rates, all while sipping on and reviewing Old Soul Cask Strength Straight Bourbon Whiskey. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective on YouTube, as well as Fathom Realty and Keller Williams Downtown. My name is Charlie Cerdelli, and I'm here with
Jameson Amoros,
Oscar Ibarra.
And guys, where are we?
We are at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, located off Arapahoe and I-25 in Centennial, on the west side of I-25.
Love it.
And it's a, how would you classify this place? Like a roaring 20s, high-end, custom craft cocktail paradise.
Yeah.
Very festival. I had a, I had a friend and colleague say that it looked like Santa Claus did his business in here.
I like it.
And I don't want to say the exact words.
And forgot, forgot to clean up afterwards? Or
yeah.
Is that what you were going
yeah,
for?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It just
exploded in here.
It did. Christmas has exploded.
I mean, there's parachuting Santa Clauses.
It's awesome. And if you guys, we didn't mention this last week, but something that they are doing here, if you want to come in, they are doing like a custom cup design here for Christmas. They have different Rouge labeled cups
like
that you can
Stein?
Come in. No, they're just like little glass cocktail cups, wine glasses. Mm. You can come in and purchase them and then like customize them a little bit while you're in here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Nice. And they're already slam packed for the season, but one, just remind everybody, the Rouge does do events. You can rent out the entire space for events. Where we're sitting right now is pretty much where you'll have your whole party. They put the tables together, all that kind of stuff. But welcome back me.
From behind the scenes.
From behind
to
the scenes.
To back in the captain's chair.
That's right.
Captain Kirk.
I missed it.
We missed you. You kind of, we'd go rabid just different directions.
It was
you
a kind good of
bring us in
though.
And you keep us going and
last week
cut
was a
us
good
off.
Conversation. Politely. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, yeah, you got it. You guys did good.
Oh,
regardless
man, we
of
were.
Me being here, that was a phenomenal episode.
Well, regardless of you not being here.
I have to listen to it because I don't remember all of it.
Yeah.
This guy thought it was a good idea to go to a bar after the Nuggets game. Where we were served well, and then he goes to a place where he made friends with a bartender that decides to give us a lot of samples.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know,
you want free sample?
free sample? It's like you walk through the mall.
Yeah, free sample. Except the free sample was Pappy 20 here.
Oh man!
Wow!
Amazing. Well, guys,
what do you think? It was great.
On the note of talking about bourbon whiskeys.
Saying.
As always, you guys know this is not just a real estate podcast where we give you guys and the consumers information. We review and drink bourbon and whiskey on this podcast. We have been blessed enough to have connections with distilleries that send us bottles. And today's bourbon that we're drinking is absolutely no different. And the bourbon that we're drinking today is Old Soul Straight Bourbon Whiskey Cask Strength. And this is from Cathead Distillery out in Mississippi. It's the oldest distillery in Mississippi. And this bottle is actually pretty special. This is a bottle that they really only release periodically. Mm-hmm. Most of their Old Soul bottles are actually small batch. This one is cask strength. So we're sitting right around 57%.
60.
It is 60. It is 60.98.
Sorry.
121 proof.
121 proof, yeah.
Yep. And most of their bourbons are 90 proof.
So. What so remind the viewers and the listeners out there, what does cask strength mean versus barrel proof?
Oh man.
You guys have the smoker's caps on, right?
Yeah.
does it look like it's a drinker's cap?
I mean, yes, because you've worn that every time we've drank bourbon here.
So
when
you,
do I don't wear a hat?
If you guys are watching the video version, you'll see the color of this, the liquid, the color of the spirit is a lot darker. And the reason that it's darker, you mostly see that with cask drinks, is because they just pull it right out of the cask. They do not filter it other than, you know, obviously getting all the little particulates out of it, but they don't do a water flush, nothing like that. It is how it is out of the cask. And that's why, again, we're sitting at that 120 proof.
Also, it was a trick question.
Yeah?
Cask strength and barrel proof are the same thing.
They are.
Yes.
You got me.
So Cathead is, you said it's the oldest distillery. It is 2010. So it's not like super
like
an old Forester. It was just the first legal distillery in Mississippi after Prohibition.
Yeah.
In 1966.
Yeah. So the cask
still the oldest.
The cask strength means
yes,
that
still
no
the oldest and the first legit legal one.
There's no dilution. Mm-hmm. So it's whatever that strength is after they pull it out of the barrel, that's what you get. They're interchangeable terms, but if anybody out there is a oh my God, Jesus Christ.
Please wait, Jameson's thoughts are loaded.
Yep, hold on.
Where's buffering.
That? We need that spinning wheel. Scotch fan. There you go. That's what I was thinking. Cask strength is more commonly used in Scotland for their whiskeys and scotches, whereas barrel strength tends to be a more Americanized term because
we're American.
Yeah. But anyway, they're the same.
Yeah, and honestly, it's pretty standard mash bill on this one. 75% corn, 21% rye, and 6% malted barley. It's a little bit higher on the barley, but
it should be sweeter.
That's what I was going to say.
It should be sweeter.
It makes sense because with a cask strength, you probably want to be higher on the barley to cook that.
Can you imagine cask strength rye?
God. That would be scratchy.
You ever seen the the circus, the fire eaters?
Yeah.
That's what I imagine.
I just picture just sandpaper going down the gullet.
So you know how a lot of the distilleries, they won gold at the San Francisco?
Yeah.
I'm interested on this one. This one was named 2020 James Beard semifinalist. Didn't win anything. It's just semifinalist. It was named semifinalist.
This is what I love about this, though, just for you guys watching or listening. With the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, obviously, like Charlie said, we're super blessed with their partnership. But not only do we get to taste and try bourbons that you're not going to find at a liquor store, and if you do, you got to go on a hunt to find something like this.
And it's going
to
be pricey.
And we'll give you guys the price of this bottle.
Yeah, and it's going to be pricey. But when you come here, you guys can taste these and have access to them just like we do.
Mm-hmm.
So we've said it before, but if you guys are like, oh, man, I really want to try this bourbon, but I don't want to spend, I don't know, $400 on a bottle, come here. There is a 99% chance that Chris Collins has what you're looking for and will pour you for whatever that cost is, and you guys can try it versus...
Well, and he's excited to do it, too. Like, everything... I mean, we've showed you guys how expansive, and you see it with the bottle shot on the video, how much they have on the shelves out here. But Chris is such a bourbon lover that he keeps stuff in the back.
Oh, yeah.
He has the everyday stuff, a big closet full, and then a big room of really nice stuff. Mm-hmm. He has a smaller closet of really, really, really nice stuff. And then he has a locker of unicorns.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. And,
and he hasn't even shown us the underground cellar that's not permitted at this place.
The underground locker room that he has. No, but he's really nice. And like before the show, he was excited to show us. And that's what I was going to say. To add on to what both of you said, he's still yet to pick something that is not good. He has a really good palate for not just food, but for bourbon and all spirits. You can see the wine behind us. They don't just have wine and bourbon. He has tequilas and other spirits here. So it's a really cool place to come and just have a cocktail.
It's awesome. Well, we poured it out. Let's go ahead and get our noses in and get these first impressions. Cheers, gentlemen.
We really need a bigger table.
Yeah, we need a closer table.
Smaller stomachs.
I gotta get to the gym.
Go walk a golf course. All right, so
you walk a golf course.
Just on the nose, this is out of the last couple that we've had, it makes sense we're sitting at 120. The alcohol 100% punches you first.
Does it?
That's what I'm getting immediately.
I'm not.
It's just the I get the ethanol, and then I get the flavor notes. But what I'm saying is it makes sense that it's a cask strength 120.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a burn, but it's not overwhelming by any
means. No.
Maybe your nose is just used to it.
Yeah.
I know early on this would have probably bothered me a bit.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Sticking my nose in the... Yeah, no. I mean, I remember we had our first 115 proof. I did it.
I still get that sweet kind of caramel.
Yeah.
Caramel.
There is...
Caramel. How do you guys say it?
Caramel.
We've gone over it.
Oh, that's right. Caramel. Yeah. You say it weird.
You say it.
Cap.
Caramel.
Caramel.
Caramelo.
Caramelo. Caramelo Anthony.
I am getting that sweetness from it.
Jesus.
But it's not that sugar sweet. It's definitely the wood sweetness. Like it's the oak that I'm getting.
Kind of like a potpourri kind of sweet.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Like a dried fruit, maybe oaky.
I was going to say a little bit of citrus.
Like a true cinnamon stick. Like a raw cinnamon.
Man, it's hiding a little bit.
Do the the Charlie approach. Go one nostril and one nostril. One nostril burns more than the other.
Mm-hmm. I am getting, okay. Yeah, that caramel comes comes through on there. There's a little bit of that citrus.
I like, you know,
fruit.
It's more just acidic.
Yeah.
There's some citrus, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now that it's swirled around a little bit, that sweet is punching.
Told you.
Punching through.
I get chocolate brownie a little bit.
Chocolate.
Like fudge.
Huh. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get the first sip in, get that burn out of the way.
I'm getting like a saltwater taffy.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to somebody about saltwater taffy. They had no idea what I was talking about.
You should never talk to that person again.
It's an East Coast thing, though, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a
coastal thing.
It's a coastal thing.
I think
thing. So. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. I know it from Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
You obviously from North Carolina. Where do you know it from? Florida. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's a coastal thing. You may get saltwater taffy, man. But.
I'll tell you what. Ever since we did that tasting with Belcones, I love the fact that now I can recognize when something has higher oils in mm-hmm. it because of how silky it is.
Those guys were awesome. Were they mm-hmm. not? Those guys were super mm-hmm. awesome.
All right. I'm officially an alcoholic.
It's not bad.
No.
I expected a lot more of like a wide mouth spread burn.
It's right on the tongue.
Right on the tip of the tongue.
Yep.
And then on the back of your throat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But mm-hmm. I'm equating that citrus flavor that you guys are tasting to just an acidity.
Okay.
But I like the acidity because it's almost like if you like Sour Patch Kids or Sweet Tarts, you know? It kind of gives it a different.
This
flavor.
One's a little weird because it's got like a.
As you breathe, it evolves and burns more.
I was gonna say it's like a subtle complexity. Like on the first sip, you're like, oh okay, but then as you're breathing it, and then it's like, wait a second, it's opening.
It's opening.
Yeah,
very chocolatey.
It builds.
It builds.
It does build.
It builds. It kind of feels like it gets angry there for a minute.
Yeah,
especially. It's like a Sour Patch Kid. First there's sour,
and then there's sweet.
this one's sweet, and then it just gets mean.
Oh, man, now even... Oh, dude, this is going to open mm-hmm. wild.
Hold on, don't let the remnants...
Mm-hmm.
There's flavor in that.
This is going to be a wild open. I can already tell.
Kind of floral, rosy. Mm-hmm.
Can I make a... I just want to... I really hope... And I know we talk about this all the time, the sign of a good bourbon. I hope that through the episode, that burn doesn't dissipate. Because as the rest of it opens...
Mm-hmm.
The burn gives it a very unique flavor profile because it sits.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're tasting that chocolate and you're tasting that kind of potpourri, the citrus
flavor, flavor heat.
I'm getting a lot.
It's like an everlasting gobstopper.
Mm. I'm getting a lot of bitter
at the end,
peppery bitter kind of.
I feel it at like the back of my
throat. The very back of my throat. I can get the black mm-hmm. that black pepper,
mm-hmm.
gunpowdery bitter kind of stuff.
But it complements that like. That charcoal, and then you have it's like dark chocolate.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not overly sweet, but it's enough to where...
Yeah, when you say chocolate, I'm more of a milk chocolate kind of guy.
Same, but this is dark more dark chocolate.
This is very
it's
much dark chocolate.
It's definitely the sweetness. It's the sweetness of the malt that we know.
Yes.
And then the wood that's adding to that earthy kind of dark chocolate flavor. That it's not over milky, like sugar.
Milky.
Sugar sweet. But it's definitely like
see that 120 proof
over milkly
doing its job
milkly
making up words.
Well, hey, it's gonna be. It's like I might need to make some shit up for the topic today.
Bundleruski.
Well,
Bundleruski do.
As you know, the main reason that we started this podcast, other than to
drink
bourbon with our friends and talk about it, was. To make sure that we're arming you, the consumer, and anybody who's looking at the real estate market, looking to get into real estate, whatever it is, we want to provide you knowledge. And the topic today that we're going to cover is kind of like a pseudo topic. We've done, you know, article headlines before. We've done market updates before. But what we wanted to do today is go over the Realtor.com 2025 predictions. And if you guys don't know, Realtor.com is kind of online with Zillow when it comes to listings and real estate information. Same thing with Redfin. But they put out studies just like Zillow does. And the reason that we wanted to address this is because this is where most consumers are going to get their information, right? If you don't have a real estate agent, if you don't normally talk about real estate and you're not involved, you're going to see realtor.com. You're going to go click on that headline and this is where you're going to get your information. So that's why we wanted for this episode, we want to kind of just break it down. They have 5 points that they're going to go over and it basically goes on home costs, interest rates, inventory, and then some other ones. And we would just want to kind of touch on each one of those topics for you today and just delve into it a little bit, just kind of from the mouth of realtors. What do we think about it? And I'll tell you already, I know, Jameson, you read through it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I can definitely tell that this is a nationwide statistic poll. Like, this is a nationwide headline.
It is.
Oh, this is not specific to any market.
Yep.
So on that note, let's go ahead and get into the topic for today. So I think the first one on the article talks about
it says home sales and realtor.com are projected to rise between 13.5% and 27.1% compared with year over year. So factors, right?
Yep.
Interest rate. I think mm-hmm. that has a lot, that's the big one. But what other factors are you thinking?
Well, so first I want to go kind of overall what they're throwing out. So for the home sales trend, what they are saying is that sales in 2025 are expected to be 1.5% more than in 2024 for an annual tally of 4.07 million sales, which is interesting because 2024, if I'm correct, mm-hmm. was historically low.
There was the least amount of homes sold or bought in 35 years,
yeah,
including mm-hmm. post-2008.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually sold less homes this year than we did in 2008.
I like it.
Which is also surprising. I think the last number I saw was about 3.9 million in annualized sales for 2024 ending.
Okay.
So there's maybe 100,000 more. I think it's going to be more than that personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because I think you'll see there's something called the home builders sentiment that they come out with every single month.
Okay.
And basically it's on a scale from 0 to 100, how confident home builders are in the housing market. And most of the time, the more confident they are, the more houses get built, the more permits get built. And as those houses get built and they offer incentives, they should sell, right? Because mm-hmm. we still have that kind of backed up demand. And over the last 3 months, that home builder sentiment rating has continued to increase. Now, it's still well below that 60 and 70 range out of 100, but we went from 40 in the middle of the year back up over 50 towards the tail end. So if that trend continues, I would assume that more communities would continue to get built and therefore you'd have more houses sell.
Yep.
So I think that 4 million for 2025 is actually low.
Yeah.
So one of our cities made the top markets in 2025, and that was Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a weird, I mean, stats here, because another one is El Paso, Texas.
Yep.
I mean,
it was the East Coast and the Midwest. Yeah, the Sun kind of dominated the top five.
The Sun Belt.
Yeah, Sun Belt.
Yeah, mm-hmm. McAllen. Yep. I mean,
I love it because, you know, as you guys know, we always try and bring
that people are going to move into these markets.
No, I think what they look at it as they look at it from an affordability standpoint
and a potential,
and then potential base. Yeah. And they're mm-hmm. depending
I can see
on the
Springs, but El Paso.
Well, it's depending on the report, right? Because mm-hmm. it will also take into account population growth and job creation,
mm-hmm.
and then overall like happiness, which is like walkability, health. You know, I mean, El Paso, you can walk right over the border.
Yep.
Hmm.
Well, and I think something important to note with the home sales trend is that, again, it's we always think of everybody thinks of the market as, oh, interest rates are higher, less buyers are gonna buy. But you also have to understand that when interest rates go down, that's an incentive
mm-hmm.
for sellers to sell their homes. So
correct.
Another statistic that kind of drove Realtor.com to do this.
Repeat that one more time. That's a very, very, very good fact.
Mm-hmm.
Lower interest rates incentivize a seller to sell their homes.
Yep.
It opens up. I like that.
Yeah. And so the reason that they throw that in there is because basically what we say all the time, when interest rates drop, you see an influx of applications, you see an influx of buyers come into the market, and the market reacts to that.
Mm-hmm.
So they base this information off of what happened this year when rates dropped down to that 6.08, the lowest that we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years. They saw a 9.9% increase in home sales
mm-hmm.
in the following month.
Right.
That, guys, I don't know if you guys don't know statistics. A 10% jump mm-hmm. off of one factor is incredible. Like that is rarely seen, especially in a market that has so much. Guys, this is a nationwide study. We're talking, yep. again, we're talking about numbers like 4 million, not 100.
Yep.
So when you hear 10% out of 4, that's a lot.
It's big.
That's a lot of movement. And I mean, going back to it, Oscar, you kind of made a really good point there with the Springs. You said you can see it, and then but then you said no, oh, how El Paso, right? But one thing that we
didn't Jason Kelsey said that was the armpit of Texas,
right? but what were we talking about earlier, right? The movement of from urban
right.
to suburban, right? And that's something that I think plays so well into this notion of, wait, what do you mean El Paso? People are going to move to El Paso? Well, yeah, because not only does El Paso probably have higher inventory, but they're going to have lower home prices, right?
Their taxes are high too, but El Paso is a border town.
Mm-hmm.
It has, it's like, as weird as it may seem, there's a lot going on in that little town.
Yeah.
A lot,
mm-hmm.
because it is a border town.
And
it borders Juarez, so it's kind of oof,
right. But what we've seen, especially in the last couple of years, is we're seeing that work from home workforce being forced to go in part time or maybe even full time again. So where we have this fluctuation of everybody living in urban areas and then going out to suburban areas, oh, I can work from home, I don't have to be in there. Now the trend's shifting again. So my question is, are they going to drive to these are they going to drive there and go to these places like the Springs, like El Paso, specifically because interest rates are going to be higher,
mm-hmm.
but the home prices in these suburban areas tend to be lower.
But okay, so with and this is where my brain's kind of not processing. With the Springs, it's what, an hour from here from where we are now?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because it's a half hour from my house.
Mm-hmm.
People make the commute to Denver. DTC is not that far for them. It's about an hour, depending on what part of the Springs. El Paso, there is nothing around El Paso. Nothing. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Not a goddamn thing. Nothing. I'll say it one more time. Nothing. You got New Mexico. You got Las Cruces. You got Sullivan Park. There's just a bunch of smaller towns. So that's why I was like, why El Paso?
I mean, I think there's a lot of towns that are like that. There was one that I found very interesting, and it was Rochester, New York.
I think military with El Paso, too.
Fort Bliss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Rochester, yeah. New York is...
You're right. Colorado mm-hmm. Springs has a... Mm-hmm. It might be a military thing.
Might be, that would be...
That would make a lot more sense. Because yeah. my mind, I'm scratching, like, what the yeah. hell? Mm-hmm. But now that might...
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's... So
how far... Okay, I don't know New York. Obviously, you're from New York. You've been there a few times. Rochester. Put it into
upstate
distance, kind of like from Denver to where?
Oh, well, if you're taking
Denver to like Northern Fort Collins.
So Manhattan yeah. to Rochester is kind of like Denver to
Northern Fort Collins.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if you add in traffic, no, but
yeah,
distance wise.
If you add in traffic, it's like traffic. It's like
you're
Denver,
2 to 3 hours Fort Collins with traffic. Too,
Denver to Telluride.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Which is probably a
Wolf
better
Creek.
Deal. Because you do have to go through the mountains to get to Rochester.
Okay.
It's closer to like Buffalo, New York, right? Yeah. But there's not a ton there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very desirable because houses are cheap.
No, you hear about it though. I've never been, but I've heard Rochester. Yeah.
Again, but
right?
You hear Rochester specifically because there's so much expansion availability, especially
correct.
When you think so much of New York is centered around the island.
If you had to, if you had to compare it to a city here in mm-hmm. Colorado, what is Rochester like?
Oh man, that's hard.
Is it like a mountain community type deal?
No.
A smaller town?
No.
It's more like a...
Aurora.
I would say the Springs.
Like, I would say it's more like a
DTC.
Nice... Like if Greeley was nice.
Wow.
If they didn't smell like...
I'm just saying.
I mean, like Longmont?
Yeah, it could be similar
Boulder.
To Longmont. More, you know what? Yeah. No.
Like Boulder?
It'd be more like... No, not Boulder.
No.
Absolutely not.
So
Boulder.
It's a farm town?
No. No. Mm. It's not. It's not a farm town. It's like Erie. Like Erie, Colorado. Is
okay.
probably a good example.
Yeah.
Like Erie, Colorado.
Broomfield.
Maybe. Broomfieldish, yeah.
Yeah, Broomfield, just smaller. Yeah.
Where'd you get Greeley from?
Because
Greeley is growing and it's out there.
And Rochester is not like, nobody, at least previously, nobody goes, man, Rochester's a great city. It's a little rough.
Okay.
It's rough.
Still growing.
It's still growing.
Still growing.
It's going through its mm-hmm. its growth spurts, but it's very highly
it's
desirable.
Going through that awkward
and I think the,
stage.
And I forget, what was the stat that we were talking about, just to remind
you? Top. I think it was
the home sales trend. We were just talking about.
Yeah, so
it going.
Home sales are going to increase, right? Because mm-hmm. I have that here too, where home sales will surge. Now this says surge, and I think what they're taking it going basically we're at a bottom.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So we can't get worse, right?
yeah.
So and one of the reasons that it was so bad was 84% of U.S. mortgages are at rates below 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So we still know that 5.5-6% range, like to Oscar's point, is what unlocks sellers, which then unlock home for buyers. They are essentially saying lower mortgage rates and more home supply is going to drive this surge, quote unquote, in transactions. I don't know, man. I don't think the surge is going to be what they think, personally.
So it does talk about military.
Pause.
It says in Colorado Springs.
Hey, hold on. Go for it. Chris needs to grab a bottle.
Yeah. Oh, no, go for it. You're good.
Yeah. I just wanted to give us a good succinct stopping point.
The magic of video editing.
Yep.
When the camera stopped.
It's a cue for the audio.
When the camera stopped when.
Yeah.
What's his name? Jordan was here. He freaked out. He was like, we're good, man.
So, all right. And Oscar, start on your point because I'm going to cut where you ended and I'm going to start where you went.
And
go for it.
So here's one of the stats that we were talking about. It says in Colorado Springs and Virginia Beach, the share of military households is nearly 1 in 3.
Correct.
So it did take military into consideration.
Nice.
And that's why those cities were chosen, I guess.
And here's, we talk about this a lot. Obviously, real estate is very, very micro market specific, okay? And predictions are exactly what they are. They're predictions. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of, you can look at a bunch of different factors and say, okay, this is what we think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But here's why this range is so large. And here's a perfect example. EXP Realty and their analytics team thinks that home sales will rise 10% next year. Realtor.com and their analytics team thinks it's going to be 1.5%. So there is obviously data sets that people are looking at differently. For example, a lot of people say that President Trump and the incoming administration, their policies might be a tailwind for sales activity because tax cuts and deregulation will boost builder confidence and business confidence, right? And that could potentially rub off on home buyers. So we always talk about this. What are the three factors for people to be able to afford a home? It's the home prices, the interest rate, or your wages.
Mm-hmm.
Those three have to work in conjunction. What they're saying is, okay, well, if business confidence increases, people are going to have more money, they're going to get raises, so on and so forth, which will then allow them to buy a house. However, the opposite side of that is we know mortgage rates follow the 10-year Treasury bond. Anytime the Treasury bond rises, interest rates on mortgages rise as well. And in a hot economy, those Treasury bond yields tend to stay higher because you have to entice people to invest in Treasury bonds and not invest in the stock market. And the only way to do that is to promise higher returns. Well, when you promise higher returns, those same investors also buy mortgage bonds. Mortgages now have to also offer higher returns.
So the other thing, too, that I want to point out, and this is at, like, I think, yeah, this is like the last sentence in this bit on the article is the wild card, of course, is how other policies of a new Trump administration affect the price of other goods and services.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is extremely important because exactly to your point, business confidence can be great. But if consumer confidence is low, if the tariffs go into place and people are having to spend more, then buyer and seller confidence, the consumer confidence will go down. So the builder confidence doesn't really matter.
So two things. My favorite word, subjective, right?
Yep.
And you brought it up with Realtor.com being 1% and EXP being 10%.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's a subjective, you know, stat because with military, I was looking up. And so if they're taking stats from these areas, what's one thing that we know that military families do a lot?
Move.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. At least I think the stat said on average every 2 to 3 years. So is that really a good market stat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then with the tariffs, I believe that, yes, the consumer spending in certain areas will be less. But if that boosts business, then that means people are making money. And at that point, the consumer has the choice to either spend or not spend on a certain product. But so if they're earning more, there's really, as long as it doesn't affect negatively other aspects of real estate like insurance, and said we're gonna get into that, but I think it might boost a little bit on the real estate side, but from the consumer's standpoint, having the choice to not spend on a product,
I think
if they're making more money.
Bold prediction.
Hold on, let me throw mine out first.
Go for it.
I like from what we're talking about right now, the difference between business and consumer mindsets, whatever it is, I think this could, let's say we have builder confidence with tax incentives, but we have consumer
hesitance.
Will that not lead to a boom in inventory? If builders are incentivized and happy to build, but then consumers are sitting because they don't feel confident, would that not build up inventory?
Yes and no.
I think if they're making money in their job security, I think they'll still buy.
What I'm saying is, instead of it being a rush of the combination of we have more inventory, the interest rates are low, and I have confidence to buy, if we can get it to a point where it's kind of regulated, where they are building because they're excited about it, and we still have a good amount of people in the market that are willing
not
to buy,
not jumping in like
exactly.
Crazy.
We could get to a point where we're starting to see some discrepancy in inventory and buyers.
So a balance, a little bit more balance. Mm-hmm. That would be a good thing. And with that said, what would it do to home prices?
Boom. And actually,
would it go down?
Well, that's actually a great, Jameson, before we move into the next part here, do you want to give that bold prediction?
Yeah, I personally think that tariffs are going to, as we go into this next prediction, if they are what they have said they're going to be, I think it's a horrible thing for the housing market, personally. And I think it's going to affect builder confidence because if
materials are costing more.
If I am putting a 25% tariff on lumber from China and Canada, and we get 80% of our lumber.
Don't we get it from like Russia too?
Not as much. Right now, nothing.
Yeah, not nothing.
But from Canada, we get about 70%, and then we get another 10 or 15
and that's, they're
from China.
Hit.
Yeah, but if there's a 25% tariff there, now, obviously, the way tariffs work, it's not the Canada doesn't get punished. The builders get punished because they have to pay that tariff for the incoming goods. Well, if lumber is now 25% more, that's going to make the cost of building a house more. That cost is then going to get put to the consumer. It's going to give the builders less funds to buy some of those rates in bulk. So now the incentives go away, right? That's number one. Number two, and again, not trying to get political. This is just facts and how the economy works. If we deport 10 million people
that work mainly on the homes
that work in construction, who's going to construct? Us, obviously. So to Oscar's point, you're going to get people that can go into construction and make $25-$30 an hour, and they're going to have more on their paycheck. But now the builder has to pay them $25-$30 more an hour, which is now going to make that house more expensive anyway. So I think there's a couple of inflationary policies that if they do get, they come to fruition, I think it's actually going to make it harder. Now, the balancing act is if we price everybody out too much, home prices have to come down. Because again, affordability is home price, interest rate, or wages. Mm-hmm. If wages are going up, right, home prices are going to go up. But if there's no inventory for home prices to go up, they're going to have to come down. So there's going to be a balancing act, and we're going to have to figure it out. I just think those two specific policies, when it comes to the number of sales, I think it actually slows down the housing market because it makes things more expensive.
And that's a great segue into the next portion. So you guys always hear us talking about how in the housing market,
this is opening up.
Oh yeah,
it's sweeter.
Oh man,
yeah.
Talk about a holiday.
I feel like
holiday
I'm eating
bourbon.
A brownie right now.
I'm so excited. But anyway, we always talk about like, you know, and Jameson mentioned it, how there's three elements, how things also always affect each other in the housing market. And the reason I wanted to start with the home sales is because a lot of the time, home sales are going to then play into home prices.
Yes.
Right. So with what Realtor.com put out, they are saying that their expectation for 2024, home prices will grow by 4%, up significantly from 1.1% in 2023. And so it makes sense that if they're projecting that more homes are going to sell, home prices are going to increase. It that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yes and no. I think it's the demand side, right? Like, it's going to be a balance of where inventory is at and where the demand is and where interest rates fall. If interest rates stay or fall from where they're at currently, we have seen, and I forget the stat, but back in September, there was like a three-week period where home sales exploded.
Oh, yeah.
Because it went down to 6%, 6.1, 6.2. We haven't seen that since because then they went back up, right? So I think the methodology on the idea or the prediction that home prices will drift higher is because we're still behind on building, and we will have that pent-up demand that will get some relief with mortgage rates. And then to Oscar's point, if we see a strong economy and continue to see a strong job market, we should see wage growth, mm-hmm. which is just going to allow more people to buy those houses. And yep. we still haven't caught up inventory-wise, especially mm-hmm. in states like Colorado. So I agree. I think we'll see home prices rise.
I really want to see, like, I really, really want to see how these outliers affect the overall statistic and the number. Like, when you have places like Wyoming, when you have places like, the you know, out there that are just such outliers compared to major cities like New York, California,
well, so
Denver.
To that point, the other piece of this, where home prices are going, is if they do elevate 3 to 4%, mm-hmm. it's going to force people to expand their search for houses to areas outside some of the major metropolitan areas. And in fact, 12 of the 16 cities that Realtor.com thinks will have double-digit price appreciation are in the Southeast or the Southwest.
Yep. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. there's, to your point, the migration portion of it, right?
Yep.
And Oscar was saying it too, like there's going to be these outlier cities, but it's because if home prices are going to continue to increase and we do still have the flexibility of working from home and doing whatever, then guess what? Those more affordable areas, you know, you think Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana, those areas are going to have a lot higher home price appreciation, because you're going to get people that are flocking to the area simply because economically that's like the only choice they have.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even I'm not gonna lie, with Alicia and I, you know, getting engaged and starting to think about the future, kids and all that kind of stuff, I'm so far away from my family, I don't really have that sphere that I can lean on where, hey, Grandma, can you watch my kids or anything like that? And that the reason I bring it up is because that's a factor, right?
Sure.
For us.
Are you trying to tell us something?
Well, no. What I'm saying is.
You're going to have kids now?
What I'm saying is.
You just got engaged, man.
What I'm saying is, we're thinking.
Congratulations, Alicia. No,
not yet. Not yet. We got to enjoy it for a little bit. But what.
A lot of it.
What I'm saying is. It's factors like that. Like, we're considering, I love this state. Absolutely love it. And I want to stay here in any way possible. But if it gets to the point where, hey, I need a bigger house, I need the support system, I need more income, more throwaway money, but average childcare costs in Denver, $2,200 a month, mm-hmm. you know? So it's now we're considering, hey, if we can make our housing costs lower, then we can provide a better quality of life in the future if we sure. need to. So I bring it up because those are the considerations. And again, just we say it all the time, is that the housing market is affected by us, the consumer, by mentality and the feeling around the market. And if we're seeing these, we have more inventory. Realtor.com, what they're saying is they're expecting 11.7% more inventory in 2025.
13.6 in Denver.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Crazy.
Right?
I agree with that.
And I can see it, especially if we actually start implementing this, switching commercial into residential. Absolutely. In Denver, that could happen.
See, what's your coin phrase about the market?
It's not...
Time in the market beats timing the market.
So mm-hmm. you need to hurry up and buy, Charlie.
Can I introduce you to a...
According to Realtor.com, it says... it's stating that Denver is still an attractive home buyer's choice because it's still... "quote unquote affordable compared to the major cities."
Get the fuck out of here!
Affordable, that's what they're saying.
Well, and I mean, to be fair though, if you look at so nationwide last year, right? The home prices still went up 3% last year.
Yeah.
In an environment where we had 7 and 8% interest rates, Denver contracted by 0.02%. So, I mean, again, it's always going to be this whole nationwide thing. But if you look at micro-specific markets, which mm-hmm. is why you work with realtors that are familiar with the area, mm-hmm. like there's pockets that, like, right now I could buy cheaper in Crystal Valley, Castle Rock, than I can in the Meadows, Castle Rock. Yeah. And it's only a 15-minute difference. Mm-hmm. But if somebody that has flexibility and just wants to live in Castle Rock, that's an important consideration. Mm-hmm. If I can get $20,000 in concession on a similar house that I'd have to pay over 15 minutes away, I'll take that all day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Castle Rock is, it's a smaller city, mm-hmm. but it has a lot of different
housing. Many amenities. And
right.
Housing, well, yeah. You have Crystal Valley. We're mm-hmm. a little more mountainy, you know, south part of Castle Rock. The Meadows is kind of like the metropolitan part of Castle Rock, if you will. Then you have old Castle Rock downtown where you have those old homes. And then northern Castle Rock, you have those multi-million dollar houses off Crowfoot. Then you have the Terrain, mm-hmm. and then you have Founders. So within Castle Rock itself, which is a small city, you have to know the pockets.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's multi-million dollar homes that well,
and I think
the Castle home is for sale. I don't know if you saw that.
Yep. And I think what's so funny too, and this is again coming from guys. If you've been listening for a while, you know, like this knowledge for me is new still. I've been doing real estate for 2 years now, but it still feels weird to me to talk like I was talking to my client last night. And he asked me about, you know, interest rates and mortgages. And I was like, yeah, but if you do this on a 30-year fixed rate and your interest rate, I literally got off the phone and I looked at Alicia and I was like, do I sound as fucking tool-y as I think I do? Like, I don't, this is crazy.
You only sound tool-y because before you didn't know. Yeah, and yes. Now it's just second nature. It is. Because we talk about it so much here,
yeah.
You're probably a lot more knowledgeable than most real estate agents.
And that's not exactly the point.
It's not tool-y. It's our job is to solve problems.
Yes.
Like, that's just what it is.
Well, and the reason that I bring it up is because the last sentence in their home prices trend bit, if I were to read this 5 years ago, if I was a consumer reading this article, this sentence would throw me for a loop. It said, we think the downward pressure on price growth due to this supply side effect will slightly win out over the upward pressure on price growth due to falling mortgage rates next year, at least compared with relative balance this year.
Well, if you said it like that, that kind of sounds a little too legal.
But that's how it sounds in my head. Like, this is for the consumer. Yeah. Like, right. You're writing this for a consumer, you know? And like, so to break that down, guys, basically what they're saying is because there's going to be a limit on the amount of homes that are being built, then that is going to cause a slowdown on the price growth because there won't be as many homes to affect prices growing, right? And the reason I bring that up is because, again, this is a consumer-based article. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't know about the real estate market, if you haven't been studying it, that sentence alone, especially for somebody who's just now getting into it, that's intimidating. Like, that's a scary sentence. But regardless, the reason that we talk about the home prices trend is because this is always something that people forget. Mm-hmm. I think for me is that we control home prices. All right. Like the homeowner controls the home prices. At the end of the day, if we were to sit down and go, hey, guys, we're all going to agree that we're going to sell at list price. We're not asking. We're not trying to raise the price on this home. Then guess what? We could regulate pricing. But if you're selling your home, it would be stupid for you to do that. And everybody's looking for top dollar in their home. So when you think about it, if we have more homes selling and everybody's looking for top dollar, and you have two neighbors that one neighbor lives on your left, one neighbor lives on the right, and both of them sell for $5,000 to $10,000 over that asking price, guess what it does to the price of your home?
Right.
It raises it.
Right? It's called a free market.
You know, and I'm just thumbing through Redfin. Mm-hmm. And as much as I don't dislike them, I don't really like how Redfin's structured, but they actually have good data. They were, I think, spot on the last few years, and they're right along with that 1.6 month over end. So they're not as extreme as EXP, but they fall more along the lines of the 1.6 month over month in October. And yeah, I mean, everybody says that it's going to be a good year for 2025 for home price, for mm-hmm. home sales.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, right? Like, again, the big thing that affects home prices are what?
Interest rates
and demand. So if you're good with it.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, so I think
prediction number 3 or 4?
Well, they have it as a wild card.
Oh, so I have, this is prediction number 2.
Okay. What?
But a prediction that mortgage rates for 2025 will stay in the 6s.
Yes, okay. So so that was the prediction.
And I don't think that's a wild card.
No.
I think that's a fact.
Well, so that's the thing is, They project, Realtor.com says that their prediction is mortgage rates will not fluctuate drastically. They will stay pretty much the same. We won't see that much of a difference. But they put it as a wild card specifically because they don't know. Like they're basically saying, and both of their wild cards are related to the policy agenda of the incoming administration. Yes. And that's really, I think that is a straight up and honest way to look at it, specifically because there is so much monetary ideology that is balancing on this presidency.
Right.
That, yes, at the end of the day, if, because we know if the more, and this is, for me, I'm not going to lie to you guys, this is the most asinine part of the housing market, but I get it from a business standpoint. The better the economy is doing, the worse your interest rates are going to be.
Correct.
And the worse the economy is doing, the better your interest rates are going to be again, because they want you to take out these loans. They want you to get a mortgage.
I mean, a good...
So they're going to lower those rates.
Well, and if you don't want to go into the economy, just the stock market.
Yeah.
When the stock market's doing extremely well, your rates are higher.
Mm-hmm.
And when the stock market plummets, rates tend to go
well,
down.
Well, here's why. Can we try and simplify it? I'll try and do this like as succinctly as humanly possible. The reason that in a recession... in a recession, mortgage rates fall.
Mm-hmm.
If we are in an inflationary period, mortgage rates rise. Mm-hmm. And it's all due to the 10-year Treasury yield. All the Treasury yield is the government tries to incentivize people to buy bonds to finance government spending.
Mm-hmm.
And those people that buy those bonds have a choice. They can either buy the bonds that are a very safe, consistent return, or they can invest their money into the stock market, which is highly volatile, but has a much higher chance of return. In a recession, people don't want to invest in the stock market, so they hedge their bets by investing into bond yields. Same thing with the housing market. If there's a higher demand for bond yields, they don't have to charge, or they don't have to give as high of an interest rate return, because they know people are going to buy them anyway as a safe investment. In an inflationary market where the stock market's doing really well, people will take their money out of those bonds, put them into the stock market, because they believe that over time they're going to get a better return. So in order for the government to finance its own spending, they have to entice people to buy bonds. In order to entice people to buy bonds, they have to say, hey, I know this is a safe investment. We're going to give you a little bit extra if you invest this money for the next 10 years. That being said, the same people that buy bonds also buy mortgage-backed securities. Mm-hmm. So now mortgage-backed securities that are being sold to investors also have to increase their rate of return or their interest rate during a strong economic period, and less so during a recession, because if you think about it, right, if we're in a recession, the stock market is not crashing, but it's not doing well, and I can buy something that has a 30-year term attached to it with a fixed interest rate return, I will spend my money on that as that demand increases, right? Then you don't have to offer as much, so your interest rates come down. That's kind of the semi-long-winded version of, if we're in a recession, your mortgage rates go down. If we're in an inflationary period, your mortgage rates go up.
Well, and it's...
Go for it, Oscar.
No, well, I'm
does that make sense?
Say,
go ahead. What I'm going to say is, in my mind, coming from where I come from, if you can afford it, they're going to make it more expensive. If you can't, they're going to make it easier. Like,
well, no, it's
just for a good snapshot and a big oops is COVID, right? Mm. We were in a recession, but we were in a space of unknown, and they thought the government thought spending was going to go down, right? Because we were shutting down in a sense.
Yeah.
So they overstimulated the interest rates, dropped it to 2%, and next you know it goes with chaos. Nobody stopped spending.
Well,
so they overdid it there, but that's a quick snapshot of what happened. It was an unknown, which recession, right? We don't know. Things they thought we were going to go crashing down and burn, and they overdid it. So they overstimulated by dropping the interest rates so low that it kind of backfired and rocketed us.
The difference with that was an artificial hand. That was us manipulating a free market in a free market sense. The asinine portion, and I think Charlie's hippie side and Cabby Hat will agree with this, is the government relies on people to take their money so that they can spend their own money.
Yes.
Right? That's what it is. Yeah. Like, if you really think about it, the fact that we finance our debt by saying, hey, buy this 10-year bond and we'll give you a 4% return after 10 years, that's a good deal, right? If I told Oscar, hey, give me $100,000, don't do anything, and in 10 years, I'm going to give you that $100,000 plus a compounding interest of 4% over that 10 years. You take it, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But if I said, hey, give me $100,000, and over the next 2 years, I'm going to give you 40% in the stock market, which one are you going to take? The stock market.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You'll take the potential of 40 versus the guarantee of 4. So now if I say, okay, I'll guarantee you 6, now it's a little bit different. But that's essentially how it works and why people think that in 2025, the rates are going to stay in the 6s because most of the Republican administration's policies are seen as inflationary. Tax cuts, looser regulations, mm-hmm. all those type of things, which normally means the stock market's going to do well because it is a capitalistic, friendly environment. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I agree. I think prediction-wise, I don't think we'll see fives unless we dip into a recession for some reason. Mm-hmm. Then we'll see in the fives, but I think we'll be low sixes by the end of 2025.
And you could, nationwide. There are portfolio products that you still can get fives. We'll still have five. But yes, I see what you're saying. On average, nationwide, we won't be in the fives. I mean, I think ideally it would be great in a healthy market if we stayed in the five and a halves and not dip any lower. Yeah. You know, because then if we start going five and a half, portfolio products start offering four, and then we're back into the races again.
Five and a half is the number, essentially.
I think so.
Here's the thing, though. When we talked about this, I'm doing a call back to our prediction episode for 2024.
So I was trying to look that up actually before because I just wanted to see what we said.
we were thinking interest rates were gonna drop. We were thinking that it was gonna get better. The economy did get better.
Yes,
but the interest rates did not correlate, right? And that's because of everything Jameson just got done talking about. But the reason,
on top of the fact that our president went senile halfway through 2024, that did not help any public sentiment.
Not at all. But the
not to get political, but I mean, really, if you really think about it, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is funny all the time. Everybody's like, oh, and you know me, I'm the stat guy. Mm-hmm. It's like stat this, stat that. Let's look at the data. Blah 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 blah. But if you zoom out and you go, well, you know what? Had he not publicly been suffering through
mental collapse,
we could very well have had a very different back end.
Oh yeah,
to 2020.
Oh, absolutely,
absolutely, different.
Halfway back end. Through, we're like, oh shit.
They're not just memes.
Yeah. Oh man, and the reason what is going on?
The reason I bring up the predictions, and especially when we're talking about interest rates, is because this is the first year. Last year, we were talking about even economists. And these predictors said, we don't know what's going to happen. Right. This is the first year in the last 3 years or 2 years since we've been doing this, talking about this, that we have a huge source saying we are confidently believing that interest rates are going to stay as they are.
Well, I would hope at this point we've gone through this now because, again, 2020 was an anomaly. Mm-hmm. It was artificially created.
Yep.
Right, we'll never, and I'll look at the camera. Like shit's you will never see 3% interest rates.
What was
ever
artificially
again.
Created?
The rate
the virus.
Well, okay.
Oh boy.
Hey, this is not the Joe Rogan podcast, my friend. Okay.
Oh boy. I love it.
Kate, come on.
Throw in shade. Throw in shade. Spotify, give us the contract.
Relax.
I want a contract.
No, but I think that's important.
That we have 2 years of data on how the Treasury bonds are affecting mortgage rates and how economic policy is affecting those and affordability. And I also think we have 2 years of a pissed off generation of home buyers and sellers that are stuck, right? So now people are starting to hone in. It took us 2.5 years.
And it took a club beating to us, the realtors, with that lawsuit, because it was more the pissed off consumer. They needed to beat someone up. Go ahead, beat us up, but we still need to move forward and educate. And
but I think that's why.
But you touched on something very, very, very correct. Across the board, we're starting to see certainty in our stats because you said it earlier, Charlie. There was an unknown. Mm-hmm. We didn't know.
No
predictions were certain.
Not only certainty, but we're starting to dial in the spread.
Yeah. Yep,
right?
Exactly.
Like, there's no longer this, except for EXP. I don't know what the fuck they're doing about the 10% home sales.
They're a realty company. They need to have stats.
But everybody else.
It's a sales meeting.
Everybody else.
They need to pump their agents up.
Everybody else is starting to dial it in.
Yeah.
And I like that because I think now if we go to the consumer side, now we're starting to get into an area where we say, okay, if I'm a buyer and I want to buy a house in 2025, what do I have to look at? This is what I'll say.
Boom. That's exactly why I started it, is because we have a sense of predictability for the consumer. Before, we had three separate elements that were all playing into this. I don't know.
Right.
Home prices, home inventory, and interest rates. Now, at least one of those three we can plan around. And we can go, okay, hey, this isn't going to fluctuate between 6.0 to 6.8 or 7, and that changes your monthly payment drastically.
Right.
If we sit between 6 and 6.2, hey, guess what? we have a range that we can work in. Exactly.
Well, not only
it saves, we can work.
Yes.
All of that.
It gives a sense of confidence.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, I think from a buyer standpoint, right, if you go into this entire next year understanding it is going to be volatile, I want to make sure that I'm working with the best lender, the best realtor that's going to keep me informed. And we've said this multiple times, get your ducks in a row if you're looking to purchase in 2025, because even though it doesn't sound like a lot, if we've got a week over week change from 6.7 to 6.3, it may not seem like a big deal to your specific monthly payment budget. But if you multiply that by the millions of people that are sitting on the sidelines waiting to buy a house and they all flood the market, you want to be able to be proactive. Mm-hmm. You want to sit there and say, okay, I'm working with a lender and he's got an inside track, or my realtor's got an inside track on the reports that are coming up next month. So I know that I can get pre-approved at a 6.6, let's just say, right? I'm going to offer on that house. And because I want it, and I think, and my team that I've assembled to help me purchase thinks that we're going to get good mortgage rate news in the next 30 days. Now what can I do? I can go under contract at a 6.6, and guess what most lenders offer? Free rate float downs. So if all of a sudden you're at a 6.6, and then we get some really good economic news and it goes down to a 6.4, which is going to happen next year multiple times. It happened in September. Mm-hmm. We went from a 6.7 to a 6 in about a week and a half.
Crazy.
Okay.
Crazy.
But if you would have gone under contract at a 6.7%, and then you're under contract, you're through your inspection, you're looking at your appraisal, and then 2 weeks later that mortgage rate drops to a 6, your lender can go, hey, guess what? Free rate flow down. I'm going to go from a 6.7 to a 6. That just saved you $300 a month.
Mm-hmm. And when he's talking about that,
prepared. So be prepared.
When you talk to your lender, he's going to either lock or not lock your rate,
correct,
right? So in a market that we know that it's pretty stable, if you have a 6%, they're going to lock it, and then that's what you're going to get when you close. Now, if it does drop, a lot of lenders will charge for that. Hell, I'll pay it if it drops that much.
Correct.
Out of my commissions and pocket. Because it's a huge savings, a half a point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's massive.
Well, I think we did honestly, fucking kudos, hats off to all three of us. I think we did a great job of bringing in the three main elements that they talked about, the three main predictions: home prices, interest rates, and home inventory. And I think this is a great time to move into our One Rock takeaway for today's episode. So either one of you guys, I know mine. You guys want to take it? Do you want me to go for it?
I could go.
All right.
My One Rock takeaway is our stability is getting a little more accurate with projections of what next year is going to do, and that you could plan around that. I mean, trying to plan around something that there's so many unknowns is hard, and I get it. Yeah. A lot of the people that I helped this year were people that needed to either sell or buy. I think next year it alleviates more in people that are planning to buy or sell. You know,
and I was gonna
getting
say
married
that,
or kids and stuff like that.
That leads into my One Rock takeaway is, guys, this is the time right now to start talking to a lender. Talk to a realtor friend, reach out, start talking to a lender, because, like I said, out of the three, we have one that we can lean on, which is the interest rate. And guess what? That is the most important part for you, because that is what dictates your monthly payments. So if you start talking now to a lender that can get you on a savings plan, that can tell you, hey, pay down this debt, get your DTI down here, you will be in a beautiful position midway through 2025 or towards the end of 2025 to move. So as of right now, based on this whole episode, start talking to your people. Get a realtor you trust, get with a lender, and get on a plan, because this is the best opportunity to plan that we've had in the last 5 years.
Buy property in Bailey, Colorado.
I love it.
So I got a two-part one.
Okay.
One, I just want to reiterate like what real estate means from an investment wealth building standpoint. Don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It will appreciate straight up. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac came out with their predictions, and they went 1 to 5 years out. If you were to buy a $500,000 house this year, the appreciation on the low end after 5 years was about 27%.
That's fucking crazy.
Right? Which means that a $500,000 house, year one, about $18,000.
That's crazy.
Right? So by year five, I think it was somewhere around like 100.
There is no ETF. There is no stock index.
But here's why that's important.
That you can invest in.
Here's why that's important. We've said it, right? Every decade, home values nationwide double.
Yeah.
That just it is what it is. The only way that's going to change is if we somehow make up the 3.7 million houses that we're short within the next 3 to 5 years. So anyway.
Is it possible? Yes, but
buy
probable?
Real estate
no.
and wait. And there are programs that we have access to that can help you do that. Don't wait to buy real estate because you'll miss the train. Just don't do it. If you're ready, do it. The next thing I'm gonna borrow from the Russians.
Oh boy.
Take it easy.
Trust but verify. Damn. Okay. The reason I say trust but verify is, as we've seen, every single fucking economic entity out there is going to have a prediction on the housing market. And you can predict things by data and you can predict things by sentiment. And data and sentiment are driven by two very different things. Sentiment is driven by emotion. Data is driven by statistics. So when you're looking and deciding, hey, what should I do? Look at multiple sources,
yes,
as many as possible, and then aggregate that. There's a book called The Art of Impossible, and it's written by this dude that I want to give credit. It's amazing. You read it, right?
Uh-huh.
Absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. He started out as a journalist. And back then, when journalism was like actually journalism and not clickbait, they had a rule at the New York Times that if you had a source, you needed to interview minimum 5 sources before you could print something and say, hey, this is accurate information.
It is the Art of Impossible, a Peak Performance Primer by Stephen Coulter.
Stephen Coulter, yes.
It's a 9-hour audiobook.
It is
not
phenomenal.
Bad. Yeah, it is. If you need a mindset shift, 100% phenomenal.
It's absolutely
book.
Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I've read it twice now.
Hell yeah.
I still don't remember his name. How bad is that? I'm obviously not at my peak performance.
You're taking the internals of the
but
book.
But understand that, like, you guys are privy to information. And the fact that EXP says 10% in home sales, Realtor.com says 1.5, shows you the canyon that is in between opinions. Mm-hmm. The more sources you research and analyze, the tighter that spread's going to be, which all that's going to do is put you in a position to make faster and better decisions.
And guess what, guys? We're here every week.
Every week.
We drop the episodes every Friday audio for you on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, anywhere that you can read it. We have
I think it had to do with The Art of Impossible because he breaks it down, right? Mm-hmm. And he broke it down as far as how do you transfer knowledge.
Yep.
And in that book, and this is a complete aside, but I want to say it because it speaks to the value of listening to individuals that are willing to do the research.
Mm-hmm. He brought it up a few times, and it's hard truth.
Yep. Right? So essentially, if you listen to us, mm-hmm, right, you're getting our knowledge. So Charlie and I have both read that book. You said it was 9 hours, right? Mm-hmm. It probably took me about the same. So it took us 18 hours combined to read and synthesize and analyze The Art of Impossible so that we can regurgitate that to you guys so you guys can use it in your own lives. The author spent 300 hours researching.
It's the compounding of knowledge.
Interviewing. Mm-hmm. All this stuff to then put it in a book for us. So essentially what we're saying is you take that 300 hours plus the 20 hours and then you listen to us for an hour. Essentially, your hour investment in listening to us and our information equates to almost 400 hours of combined research on a single topic.
I'm going back to it because we're moving.
Or even in real estate.
You could say.
Same thing. Exactly.
20 years plus.
You could say.
I would even say, you know what, Oscar?
That this podcast is a distillation of real estate information.
It is. And to Oscar's point, right? Not even fuck the 20 years. In your 20 years, how many transactions have you done?
Hundreds.
Right. So let's say we have a combined, I don't know, 300 transactions.
Plus.
Okay? Let's just say that. We have done a combined 300 transactions. You guys are utilizing us for one to start.
Mm-hmm.
That means that you reaching out to us, yes, it gives you access to any three of us, but it gives you access to 300 plus transactions worth of knowledge and experience that we use to help you guys make that decision.
Mm-hmm. And again, guys, there's no money flowing here.
No.
We're chilling. We're here for you.
There is bourbon flowing.
Bourbon flowing. Two things. One is, you know, we were talking about the sales and interest and the stock market. I had this conversation yesterday with a potential buyer of mine that he had invested in some condos, and I went back to 2010 or 2009. I had an investor that had money to buy houses in Sunnyside,
Yeah.
When they were still 80 to 100,000 each, and he had the capital, and I said, pick up 10.
That was when Sunny Pick was up rough, 10. Man. That was rough.
If he would have just picked, I mean, $100,000.
I'd pick up 10.
$100,000. Yeah. He had the money. $100,000, put a renter in there. It will cash flow. He would have cash flowed at least $400 or $500 a month.
Easily.
So he's already making a profit.
He would have been a multimillionaire.
Right now, those same houses are about $600,000 to $700,000
yep.
each.
Yeah, exactly.
How much money did he?
That's 7 millions.
But it's a fine line. $7 million. And again, this podcast, I think, I mean, I pride myself because I told the man. He said, well, you've been in here for 20 years. You made some money. I said, yes and no. There have been some rough years. I said, but at the same time, I've yet to this date, knock on glass, sold a house for the commission.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
I've got a house right now that I'm selling pro bono.
Right.
I'll give a story time on that shit next week.
Maybe we'll have a podcast where we tell our stories, but we're as honest as we can be. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to sell snake oil.
No.
We're going to get our stats, even if they hurt us. But that's something that we want to project to you.
Yep. We were here for you through the worst year for real estate agents in the last 10 years.
35.
You know 35. How many good agents left the market last year? Friends of mine, too.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
We're
yeah.
still here. Yep. We're still giving you good information.
Love it. Yeah.
Love I mean, this. I don't know. I'm unemployable. I don't know that I can do anything else but real estate exactly. at this point.
Exactly.
It awesome. Is what it is.
Only homes. That is awesome. Well,
only homes.
With that being said, let's go ahead and move into the bourbon review for today's episode. And this bottle, I think, was a perfect bottle for today's conversation.
Sugary apple pie is what I'm getting right
it
now.
It floated through.
It's delicious.
It added to the conversation. And for me, I mean, just it did. Jameson, to your point, it opened.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Like, I'm talking like you ever see that slow motion, that Discovery Channel? That
of the flower.
Of the flower, yes. Just slow motion.
Open. Yeah, like, the evolution of this bourbon over the last hour has been phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
Especially for being 120 proof.
Mm-hmm. 126, isn't it?
It kept the burn.
120
kept,
something.
But the burn is there on the sip, but it dissipated on the nose.
121.
You get now Dude, on the I, nose that it's been opened, you get the sweet, you get that sugar, that chocolate caramel. And but when you take the sip, it's still a bourbon. It's, you know what I mean? Like
it is good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Is
it hot, good. Sticky, sweet?
It honestly, Oscar, I am really excited to hear your rating on this, because if someone were to ask me, like, mm-hmm. what is Oscar's taste in bourbon?
It wouldn't be this, right?
Well, I would say that this would challenge that for you, because it keeps
the burn.
It keeps
but
a burn,
it's on that sweet
side. It keeps a wood flavoring to it.
I said at the beginning, my one hope is that the burn stays, mm-hmm. because we've had other high proof barrel strength or cask strength, now that we know there's no difference, bourbons that have lost the heat by the end, mm-hmm. and it just kind of turns into a really heavy dessert bourbon.
Last week's.
Mm-hmm. This.
And the fact that this Glencairn that we're drinking of, this is like a 4-inch diameter on the top. Like that, it's
You'd
getting
be two
a
hours
lot
away
out.
From giving birth if this was measured in centimeters.
Whoa.
It gave birth to a
it's
hell of a
dilated,
good bourbon.
It's dilated, baby.
Screeching.
It gave birth to a hell of a good bourbon. No,
so it opened up beautifully. It really did. The flavors are all there. The burn, because it carries to the end, mm-hmm. it incorporates into the flavor of the sweetness. And that's where I think a lot of my flavor profiles of the other bourbons that kind of mute or the burn dissipates, mm-hmm. it kind of overpowers into like more of a sweeter or bitter. And this one just stays consistent, mm-hmm. although the rest of the flavor profiles just elevate a bit, if you will.
This reminds me a lot of 100% the, agree. If you guys don't remember when we first started coming to the Rouge, we had the Heaven Hill grain to glass line where they legitimately
the
worked.
Strength.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where they legitimately worked with the top like agricultural.
Local.
Yeah. That. Top agricultural research firms that like have the numbers on this, and we gave that a high number because the flavor and the complexity stayed throughout the entire episode. That is exactly what this reminds me of at the beginning.
Yeah,
I was like, oh wow, this is good. This is going to taste great. The flavors are wonderful, but I was holding out for how it opened, but. Now being at the end, and again, guys, as you always
I said,
know,
what 40 minutes sounds like, bro. This is
40 minutes. Like
this is evolving.
This is honestly like if I'm thinking of a bourbon for my taste palate,
uh-huh.
this hits the nose perfectly.
And it's from Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not even the bourbon capital of the world. It's Jackson, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm going to turn the bottle again.
Which, that's Martin Luther King famous.
And what's crazy, they also distill other spirits there.
Yeah,
I know. Mm-hmm.
They have vodkas. They have...
yeah, but this was...
What the heck is hoodoo chicory? I know what chicory is, but what's...
Hoodoo chicory?
Yeah,
interesting. Hoodoo or voodoo?
It's H-O-O-D-O-O.
What's chicory? Hoodoo.
Chicory is it's a like a pea.
Okay.
That they you drink it like coffee down in like Louisiana. You have chicory coffee. But it's a chicory liqueur. It's good.
I will say that this one for me it the sweetness maintained through, but I feel like the spices opened up and kind of came through a lot more as it opened. They were there at the beginning, like the tip of your tongue. But now it's almost as if you get the burn and then you get hit with the spices and the oak. Then it dies down to that caramel, chocolatey kind of flavor. So
when we open the bottle.
Oh, man. Now I got to try this hoodoo chicory. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at their hoodoo chicory.
Yeah.
And essentially it is like it's a liqueur, right?
Mm.
So like it's black and walnut charred chicory, espresso. With a medium to full body. So it's kind of like a, I want to say like a Bailey's mixed with like a peppermint schnapps almost.
Mm-hmm.
But hoodoo, obviously, hoodoo is voodoo, right? It's just the actual Creole version of voodoo is hoodoo.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The best part of this is it's only barreled in true voodoo fashion under a full moon. They will not barrel it. Unless it's a full
moon. There's a ritual behind it.
I love it. Oh, man. But no, on this one, I definitely getting more of that, like I said, that spice that's coming through. It's almost like a snickerdoodle where it's sweet, but it has that.
It's like an apple pie.
Like a cardamom, like.
So.
Or gingerbread.
Yeah, who's like a what do you make a white Russian out of?
Kahlua.
It's like Kahlua.
Okay. So. The flavors that kind of pop while I'm drinking it now that opened is kind of the crust of an apple pie. Mm. That sugary, cinnamon, crispy pie sweetness is it will kind of it opened up to that. But let me tell you, when I first drank it, when we first opened it, if I had to rate it right there and then, it would be a very, very different rating than now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the caveat. When you buy it, let it open up.
I know, but that's the beauty of it. That's what we always say.
But that's good, right? Because you opened a drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just going to take one sip and then rate this, it's not going to be what you get if you let it open up and evolve.
Well,
if I had to rate it at the beginning, it would be a 4.
Well, and let's be honest. It's if you're buying a bottle of bourbon like this and your plan is to pour out half a glass and just chug it back or shoot it,
you're having a rough day.
Leave.
No, I would just break leave. The bottle over your head, bro.
That's what I'm saying.
That's 120 proof.
Yeah,
that's not the point.
Unless you're going through some shit.
I was going to say, you're going through some shit. If that happens, you're going through some shit. You're going through some shit. Nothing matters.
But you're going to take the shot. If you're going through some shit, you're going to take the shot and then pour a second one and then sip on it to talk about it. But if you're just looking to like drink it and, oh, no, I just want a shot of this, get it through, please do not buy this bottle.
This is definitely a bottle you open up and have a conversation over.
Yeah.
Maybe not like a party bottle.
Listen,
but this
I could talk politics with my in-laws with this bottle.
Ah, shit! Yeah,
wow. All right, that's a big that's a big ask.
Just saying.
All right, so let's go ahead. And as you guys know, we do our rock rating, and our rock rating is based on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being the best, 10 being the worst. Because the more rocks you put in a bourbon, the worse that bourbon usually is. I'm gonna take it on this one. Before we give it, this bottle originally was $100. It is down on sale, kind of like end of life, end of shelf, at around $89. With that being said, I would pay this $89. I have friends coming up for Christmas. We're going into a cabin. I would go buy this or a Dexter and bring it with me and be like, hey, guys, all right, we're chilling. We're having a good time together tonight. This is what we're drinking.
It's very different than a Dexter, but it holds its own a Dexter.
But I'm going to put, for me, I'm going to put this at a 2.1. If not a 1.8.
Wow.
Yeah. This hits everything. It has the spice. It has the sweetness for me. It has
what
the
did
burn.
We read, Dexter?
Dexter was a 2.2, I think.
Cool.
2.3.
To me, this is Dexter on steroids.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how I see it. Like, if how do I explain this? If Dexter is, because Dexter per bottle is about $60. This is 100.
70, so 72, yeah.
No, it's 60 down in Castle Rock.
All right, well, then I'll pick up Castle Rock then.
I think it has everything that Dexter has, but it adds in the hair on your chest. This is a bourbon whiskey that the Heaven Hill barrel strength had.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I'm most impressed with. Now that it's opened up, if you put your nose in it,
oh, yeah.
The burn's gone.
Oh, yeah.
There is no burn. The ethanol.
Well, there is no bourbon in mine.
Burn bin. There's no bourbon bin. The burn's gone on the nose, and normally that means it's gone on the palate, mm-hmm. and it is not. It is stayed. And I think that, as we have said, is a quality of a very good bourbon.
I'm going to grab JC's
glass
real fast.
That you can have.
Hold up. All right. As everybody, JC's glass, we leave it open, and we do not touch it. Obviously, like, I don't. Mine is open. I do one pour, but I swirl it. I sip it.
I do one pour.
Stop it. Just put your nose to that. That has not been moved around. Tell me that does not hold up.
Jesus.
This has just been opening for an hour and 20 minutes right now.
Okay, hold on.
But even so, I just poured this too. I mean.
Yeah. It's more subtle with JC's, but it's still there.
Stop hogging the glass. I want to smell.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's almost
peachy. Yeah, so, hey, real quick.
It still holds its own.
It's crazy.
Oscar, you go. I got to look something up.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. So this one's kind of, it's out there for me just because it does. One of my flavor profiles is definitely there, the burn, the heat. I like the higher proof stuff. It's just, I want to know that I'm drinking bourbon at this point. It, like I said, initially I was like, it's really bitter. The bitter overwhelmed it. But as it sat and opened up, as my palate kind of acclimated to the mm-hmm. to the bourbon, then a lot of the flavor profiles just popped.
Yeah.
Even this that I just poured, it just pops. Mm-hmm. It kind of, it's like that flower. That they give you, the bartenders, when you take that shot, that numbs it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you start drinking it. It stays with you, and then it elevates the flavor. And I can appreciate that, because as you're drinking, you're like, it's kind of like the bourbon either flattens out or it stays, right? This one definitely not just stayed, but it elevated itself. If I had to rate it at the beginning, I think I would have rated it about a 4. It was just too bitter. I mean, the burns were there. It was more my wheelhouse, but it was very bitter. Now that I've been sipping on the first pour, I just poured me another one. The one that sat here was very, very sweet forward, but with not like a artificial sweet. It was just really, really good. I want to rate this fair. With the price point, I think this is sitting around 2.25. So 2.25.
Yep.
It's a good It's a good bourbon.
Yeah. I like it.
I really do like it.
I take pride in the fact that I'm on point.
I mean, with Oscar. And the thing is, kind of just takes me back is they've only been around for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
They did a pretty good job with this. And when I started seeing all this other stuff that they do, not to knock Breckenridge, but that rum crap they did was it was not good.
It was a ploy. It was not
good. No. And I'm kind of,
I like how we keep going back to that.
Well,
like,
because
that, poor guys, they just keep taking strays though. Like every third episode.
Well, I mean, they do.
They're
a
just
lot
sitting there
shit.
Walking on the show like, oh, God damn, what is shit?
Sorry,
because they do a year and a half.
They do vodkas. They do. They say that they do another line of canned cocktails. So they're expanding, right? They're business owners. They're gonna want to, you know, produce something for everyone. And this in itself, and I don't know if it's, you know, if we buy the regular stuff that's 90 proof, it's going to be this good. Obviously, Chris does a great job of bringing us great bottles. This bottle, for 15 years in the business, they're just two best friends that like bourbon and blues. I think they did a great job with this.
And that makes so much sense because I am an old soul. And yeah, this honestly, well done. If out of all 70 something bourbons that we've tried, it's Dexter in this one for me at the top.
Wow.
Like 100. This has everything for me. It's got the sweetness, but not to the point where it's sugary sweet, where it overpowers everything. It has the burn. Yes. It has the spice that combines to it. I might have to buy a bottle from Chris before we leave for this.
Buy this and a couple of Maduro sticks.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. My God.
That's delicious.
Woo. This is going to be a good trip. All right, J-Mo. We got a 2.2. We got a 2.21. Where are you sitting?
2.25.
Ooh. That felt good. Not as good as that bourbon. It felt good. listen. If God himself came down.
Easy.
Hold on. Where are you going?
And said, I mean, if you're still with us at this point.
Where are you going?
Stick in there. And we're going to see where this is going.
And I'm not a Hang religious man. I'm not a religious man. And maybe we're talking Greek gods because they have what's the.
Mythology?
Yeah. What's the drink of the gods?
Mead.
No, it's not mead.
Yeah,
it's,
it was mead.
No, it's not mead.
You got me there.
God damn it.
Coffee?
Somebody look it up.
I got you. Go for it.
All right, so.
We got you.
It's, speaking of, total side note.
It's mead.
Guys, if Ginto is 120.
My brain goes because there's a really good show on Netflix with Jeff Goldblum. And he plays Zeus.
Oh, yeah. It's
Chaos. Fucking phenomenal. Chaos. But the whole show revolves around this mythical drink of the gods.
Nectar?
I know, but it's got a
nectar of the gods.
Ambrosia?
Ambrosia. That's ambrosia. What it is.
Okay. So mead is also.
So if Zeus came down and said, I am going to give you the drink of the gods, a.k.a. ambrosia, right? And I'm going to tailor it, Jameson, to your individual taste buds. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we rated Dexter a 2. We did.
Yeah.
I can't rate this lower than Dexter. I can't. Right,
yeah.
Because the only reason I say that is because Dexter was sitting at 95 proof.
Yep.
Right? So it was about a little bit less than 50%. So it wasn't barrel proof. If I take stock of every barrel proof or cask strength bourbon whiskey we have had on this podcast, this is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Without question. And it's for a very specific, simple reason. It has kept the burn the same.
A good burn, too.
From the first sip to now. But everything else, complexity-wise, has leveled up.
And
I can't say that.
The burn kept me going.
For a lot of bourbons. Mm-hmm. I really, 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 no. really, so, really, so really, does really, that, really can't.
So
especially comparing after it to an hour and 20 minutes?
Hold on. Comparing it to a Dexter, that's 90 proof.
95, but yeah.
This is 121 proof.
Yeah.
The drinkability is the same.
That's what I'm saying.
Does that give it more of an elevated rating?
For me, absolutely.
Yes. So absolutely. Now here's the second reason.
Because I too like Dexter, but in a different way.
So here's the second reason that Zeus himself has come down and offered me this ambrosia.
Presented this.
Okay. So I'm sure it's we not talked about this off Poseidon. Podcast.
I think it was Poseidon. Zeus. I mean,
no, it was definitely Zeus. Okay, right, catch up on your Greek mythology. Jesus
man,
Christ,
that's all about me.
This is embarrassing.
I love it.
Anyway, so I told you guys off camera. I opened up my Weller Full Proof. Mm-hmm. Okay, Weller Full Proof is something that a lot of people love, and it's
highly regarded in the industry.
It's at 56%. Okay, so was that 118 proof?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is 121, and I thought the Weller Full Proof, and that was a private barrel select. So they had Davidson Liquors went out. They went to the distillery, they picked out their own barrel, and it was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. However, if I were to purchase that bottle, $200 minimum.
Mm-hmm.
$200 to $300, $250 on average. This is on sale for what?
$89.
Fucking not even close, dude.
Not even close. Day.
Not even close. And my third point of why you guys are gonna be like, what the fuck are you rating this? Anytime I introduce somebody to bourbon, right, and I go high proof,
yeah,
it's got to be a good bourbon because otherwise I'm going to send them running for Heaven Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven Hills. The hills. The Heaven Hills. Hey. This, no hesitation. And for a beginner, I'd probably put it on a single nice rock to just give it.
Break down that bourbon a little bit.
And they've only been around for 15 years.
And I guarantee you after two.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. After two, they'd be like, this is the greatest bourbon. Look, why have I not drank a bourbon my entire life? So, all of that being said,
I got to give them props like a smoke wagon. They haven't been around forever. Yep. They're doing a great job. Mm-hmm. Same with these guys.
1.3.
Damn.
All right. Woo. All right. We got our first bourbon that it's came in the close one. To the one.
God.
I, yeah.
1.3.
Yeah. I think, okay.
So if this was a $200 bourbon,
yeah,
I think I'd be at about a 2.
Yeah.
But for $89,
yeah,
it's definitely
and for what
top shelf.
I mean, dude, it's not even. Yeah.
And guess where you can find it?
It's a great bourbon.
The Rouge Wine and Bourbon Beach. No, but in all honesty, guys, that's the cool part. We say it all the time. If you want to give this a try, Chris does have it here. You can always come out and have a single pour. You don't have to pay $90, but you can come here, get a taste of it, and get exactly the experience we did, where we're willing to now go buy the bottle.
If
for
you're
the
an experienced bourbon drinker, you're going to spend $90 well spent.
I just absolutely don't know what this doesn't have, I guess. Like, yeah, I want to ask you guys, like, what's it lacking?
It's not lacking anything.
I think what could it do better?
I think we're...
It can't do anything better. For what it is, it's fucking great.
So then the only reason I'm asking is our highest rating was what?
2.
2.
And that was what?
There's a few.
Dexter was one.
The Dexter, the Heaven Hill.
Okay. The Barrel Proof Elijah Craig. Or the...
Right.
Yeah, Barrel Proof Elijah
Craig. So how is this...
Barrel Proof Cask Strength?
How is this?
So
I'm just asking
for me,
you guys, why is this above those three?
So for me, this one didn't get a higher one. Because my sweet palate isn't where my wheelhouse is. If it was less sweet and more, I don't know, leathery or
tart.
Leathery or woodsy.
Okay.
I would have rated it probably 1.5.
Okay. That's fair.
Or more.
This
for me,
palate to a T.
For me.
So you can tell me why.
Honestly, because everything else was there.
Honestly, I think it's just because the one is so coveted in my head.
I get it.
I say that I'm going to admit that's the issue, is because I think about that one and I'm like, man, it has to, like, I'll say
no,
all the time,
that's
it
fine.
It has to be the one.
That's fine. I'm not saying if, what I'm saying
what
is
it's missing. That's I can't tell you. That's
it's not
I mean.
Missing anything.
No,
that's what I can't.
I'm not saying rated a one. What I'm saying is you have rated this worse than Dexter.
I say like a 1.8. I give it a 1.8.
Okay,
I'll lean on a 1.8.
Thank you. I just can't. Yeah. If you love Dexter,
it is.
This is everything that Dexter is. And then some. Mm-hmm. So I just,
no,
the rating didn't make sense.
It goes too much on the sweeter side for me, but this does not lack anything. My personal.
I totally get you.
100% flavor wheels. It's not like, ooh, deliciousness.
Right.
Mine's
totally get
more
that.
Of a, you know, tobacco-y, plummy kind of way.
But that's your palate.
If it went that way,
palate. So
if it went that way, I'd probably be right up there with you. 1.3, 1.5. It's a great. And what blows my mind is that they've only been around for 15 years. These guys did a great.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
Shout out.
Price.
Shout out to.
And the juicy side is
very. How many bottles does he have?
I don't know, but I'm about to ask him if I can buy one.
Hold on. Time out. You can't drink this at the Rouge.
Because we just bought all the bottles.
We're all going home with one. Sorry,
all right,
guys.
With that being said, guys, episode. Phenomenal episode.
Do
great
know,
bourbon.
Real
great
quick,
topic.
Do we know what the pour amount is on this? Like how much you would charge?
It's under 25.
All
fucking day.
How much did you buy?
All fucking day.
I paid 40 for Blantons and
all fucking day.
This is 100 times better than Blantons.
Yeah. All right.
I'm sorry.
Great episode. Great bourbon. This is exactly the reason why we started this podcast. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you all for being with us on this. You can always reach out to us, send us an email at any point in time, resotr@themilehighperspective.com, or give us a phone call.
720-584-3361.
And we will be back week after week to keep bringing you guys these reviews, these real estate information. We will catch you later.
Wait, hold on. How do you follow us on social media?
Oh,
Brett?
Yeah. Yep. Sorry, Oscar.
This is what happens when Charlie misses a week. He gets all out of
it. You're right. And I have good bourbon. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
OscarTheRealtor.com or OscarTheRealtorCO.
That lifting agent or the lifting agent on Instagram, TikTok. If you're looking for anything production wise, you can look for me, Beat the Jeans Productions, BeatTheJeansProductions.com.
And the Colorado Real Estate Guy on pretty much everything.
I'm
business
going home
owners and real estate agents out there. Charlie has honed in his craft. Great job.
Appreciate it. I'm going home with a bottle today, boys. Cheers.
Me too.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Later.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere you listen to podcasts. And to see the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. To stay up to date with all the specials and events going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit therougewinebar.com.